Welcome to Today on Broadway for Tuesday, April 18th, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
James, it was a busy Monday.
Oh, boy.
Lots going on.
Well, you know, it started off very slow, didn't it?
It really did. This will kind of be the beginning of our first story, but it seemed like a long time before we got any news about what was going to happen with Groundhog Day, mainly because they just said, "Heff, forget you. We don't need to send out a press release. We're going on like normal. You know, nothing to see here." But then once we kind of started to figure out that Andy Carl was going to be in Groundhog Day for last night's opening night, the floodgates opened. We got casting news for Broadway, for off-Broadway, for big-time concerts. Then we got super late grosses because of the holiday, and the floodgates were just opened. So a very busy Monday around the Broadway world.
Absolutely. And, you know, it screwed up everybody because our Monday morning Broadway briefing, what did we get Broadway briefing, 1 p.m.?
No, it's closer to like 10:30, I think. But I totally understand because like we talked about on yesterday's show, we kind of just anticipated that there would be a press release sent out early Monday morning or early-ish because, you know, just coming up off a holiday weekend. Get that thing out early in the morning. Let everybody know whether the show was going to open for Groundhog Day and whether or not Andy Carl was going to be in. But as the minutes turned to hours, we didn't really get anything official until we started seeing people like Michael Paulson of the New York Times tweeting out pictures of them setting up guardrails and stuff around the August Wilson Theater for the opening. And then Andy Carl sent out an Instagram himself, and we started to piece together some information. But I don't know if we want to bleed into our first story or not here, James, but lots of stuff to talk about around Groundhog Day.
Well, let's jump into it. Andy Carl injury, Groundhog Day open.
As we kind of said, everything just came to a head. And as things started to come out, we started to realize that Groundhog Day was going to open on Monday night, and that Andy Carl was going to soldier through whatever pain he was in and perform as Phil in the opening night performance. Now, what made that even more interesting was sometime in the afternoon, Andy Carl posted on his Instagram that he had, in fact, suffered a torn ACL. Now, James, this is one of the things you and I talked about off air. This is kind of what I assumed had happened, because the way it rolled out was very similar to the way information rolls out with an athlete who tears an ACL. Now, there are, as you can imagine, if you tear a piece of paper in half, that's much different than from just tearing a little piece on the corner. So there are definitely degrees of a torn ACL, but a severely torn ACL could put somebody out of action, at least in a sporting sense, for 8 to 9 months to a year. Obviously, that's not necessarily the case for Andy Carl in this situation, but he did perform opening night of Groundhog Day with a visible black knee brace on. Apparently, you could see a little bit of a limp during the opening night performance, but he got through it. There is video that I'm seeing floating around just about now as we're recording of the curtain call. So I'm sure we'll start to hear a little bit more as to how his performance was modified, or you know, what he did differently for opening night that he had during previews. But I mean, the guy's a real life Rocky, just gets knocked down and gets right back up. So congratulations to him and everybody else who made this happen, because this is not something that could have happened just on his own. I'm sure that there were doctors, physical therapists involved, maybe a priest, maybe a bartender. I don't know. Somebody was involved to help this happen. And from the reviews that we're going to talk about here, it's probably a really good thing that Andy Carl was able to perform on opening night, because it sounds like some nominations might be on his way.
So what did Mr. Brantley have to say?
Well, the venerable Ben Brantley of the New York Times, kind of not to bury the lead here, he made the show a critic's pick, writing, "Repetition is an art of infinite variety as it's practiced by Andy Carl in Groundhog Day, the dizzyingly witty new musical from the creators of Matilda. Portraying a man doomed to relive a single day over and over and over again in a small town that becomes his custom-fitted purgatory, Mr. Carl is so outrageously inventive in ringing changes on the same old, that you can't wait for another, almost almost identical Day to Dawn. That might also be said by the bounteous surrounding production that opened on Monday night at the August Wilson Theater, which features a song by Tim Minchin and is directed by Matthew Warchus, collaborators on Matilda, with a book by Danny Rubin. Based on Harold Ramis' 1993 movie, Groundhog Day reimagines a much-loved film about instant karma with such fertile and feverish theatrical imagination that you expect it to implode before your eyes. Brantley goes on to talk about how maybe that combustibility is what has led to a few different hiccups for Groundhog Day throughout its preview period, from the very first preview issue they had with their automation to Carl being hurt. But he obviously loved the show. He did enjoy it in London as well, so that's not a complete surprise. But his sentiments are very much shared by David Rooney of The Hollywood Reporter, who wrote, quote, "Unlike far too many musicals regurgitated from hit films, Groundhog Day is a delirious reinvention with its own defiantly unique personality, a restless forward-backward spin that leaves you smiling, exhilarated, and giddy, much like the tilt-a-whirl ride that briefly occupies the stage in the show's second act. The fiendishly crafty creative team has devised a musical that cracks open the source material to amplify its themes, using the story's collision of misanthropy and sweetness to explore existential questions about lives stuck in neutral and the liberating power to unlock meaningful change by savoring every moment as a fresh experience." He continues, quote, "No discredit to the show's architects, but the not-so-secret weapon here is Andy Carl. It requires resourcefulness to take an iconic character and reshape it from the ground up. But that's exactly what Carl does, as cynical Pittsburgh TV weatherman Phil Connors, whose condescending disdain for the quiet small town life of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, literally bites him in the ass as he wakes up on assignment there each morning to rediscover it's February 2nd all over again. What's more, Carl pulls off the tricky feat of keeping us firmly in the corner of an unapologetic louse. He gives a musical comedy performance of the highest caliber, sliding from self-centered insouciance into surprising open-heartedness, displaying a seemingly inexhaustible range of physical expressiveness along the way." All right, James, those are two reviews that almost line up perfectly, but as always, there's a little bit of a disconnect with somebody, as David Cody of Time Out New York, who did like it enough to give it 3 out of 5 stars, but wrote, quote, "The meta way to review Groundhog Day would be to repeat the same sarcastic, nitpicking paragraph 3 or 4 times before softening up and saying, aw, heck fire, it's great, thus breaking the spell of grouchy repetition. And while there are likable, inspired moments in this musical adaptation of the great Bill Murray movie, time crawls as you wait for boorish weatherman Phil Connors to surrender to human kindness and true romance." Okay, David Cody, I guess, didn't like it. That sounds pretty bad, but he did give it 3 out of 5 stars. So I guess it's probably something that, you know, has value to even people who don't see all of the charm that Brantley and David Rooney did. But James, for a show that's kind of been struggling a little bit at the box office, which we'll talk about here in a minute, these are pretty great reviews no matter what happens to Andy Carl. However, with so much love being given to him, you have to worry if he does have to miss some time because of the injury, or even cut back his schedule to make it not so hard on his knee, that could impact things in terms of how much money they make anyway.
So I measure a lot of these type of stories in how much my non-theater friends ask me about this. And my non-theater friends are all over this today. Yeah. They were like, is this guy going to go on? What's happening here? And so I think that this was a really smart move, as long as Andy's
healthy. Don't say it. Don't say it. Don't.
I'm not sure what you mean.
I just thought maybe you were saying maybe they did it on purpose. Maybe it's all a smokescreen. Maybe it's the cat's protest.
No. I'm saying that as long as Andy was healthy and didn't hurt himself more tonight, I think it was a really good idea to keep going tonight. Because they got a huge amount of media out of this, a lot of exposure of people that didn't know that the show was opening tonight, all of a sudden knew the show was opening tonight, and hey, let's get some tickets. So it's interesting. We'll see if they announce some box office wraps tomorrow and see if the box office got a bump out of tonight's show for everybody else. And we'll have to see. And there's other huge news. So let's move on to the second big thing of the day. Disney finally announced the Denver and Broadway casts of Frozen.
Yeah, James, this hasn't exactly been a huge secret amongst the Broadway community, at least in terms of the two biggest names in the show. But yesterday, Disney made it official when they announced that Casey Levy and our very own Patty Murin will star as Elsa and Anna in the world premiere of Frozen, the musical, in Denver this summer, and then at the St. James Theater next spring. Also joining the principal cast are Jelani Aladdin as Kristoff, Greg Hildreth as Olaf, John Riddle as Hans, and Robert Crichton as the Duke of Wesselton. He's most recently the co-creator and star of Cagney off-Broadway. I saw him in two different roles in Anything Goes on Broadway a number of years ago, and he stole the show for me in a lot of ways. Actually co-starring with Patty Murin's husband, Colin Donnell, now that I think about it. So he's great. So I'm super excited that he's a part of this. Additional principal and ensemble casting will be announced soon. But James, wait, there's more. In addition to the casting announcement, yesterday we learned that Tony winner Rob Ashford had replaced Christopher Gattelli as the production's choreographer. Ashford has worked with director Michael Grandage for years in London and New York. So this normally, I guess, wouldn't be a surprise in a vacuum, but with all the tumult of the original director Alex Timbers being replaced and this being brought in and then Betsy Wolf being replaced by Casey Levy, it does make you slightly concerned that there's been so much turnover for a show that hasn't even played a performance yet. But Casey Levy and Patty Murin are starring in Frozen, so I could not be happier, and Patty is on cloud nine. I just spoke to her just briefly today, and she said, even though she knew this announcement was coming, you know, this wasn't a surprise.
Yeah.
It did kind of take her breath away a little bit when it finally was public.
That's awesome. I love that. All right. Last week's Broadway grosses. Well, hello, dollar.
Hello, dollar. I like that. You did. That's good. Last week's Broadway grosses, as all shows, played at least seven performances. There was nobody in previews that played less than seven. But there was a handful of shows taking advantage of the holiday to squeeze in a ninth performance. They surged up to surpass $41,151,000. That's up nearly 17% from the previous week. So hello, dollars indeed. Unsurprisingly, Hamilton topped the charts with $3.1 million and was followed by a trio of shows that added that extra ninth performance. And those were The Lion King, which grossed $2.86 million, Wicked with $2.55 million, and Aladdin at $2.14 million. Hello Dolly rounded out the top five with $2,032,000 in just seven performances. While Hamilton is still the king of the top ticket hill at $849, Dolly isn't too far behind at $748, which is crazy because almost every other show's top ticket is in the $250 range. Rounding out the $1 million club in spots 6 through 20, yes, you heard me, 20 shows grossed over $1 million last week. They were The Phantom of the Opera. I know, crap, that's a lot of money. They were The Phantom of the Opera, School of Rock, Waitress, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, The Book of Mormon, Paramore in its final week on Broadway, Sunday in the Park with George, Anastasia, you're excited about Paramore, aren't you? Dear Evan Hansen, Sunset Boulevard, Come From Away, Cats, Miss Saigon, and Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812. Spring break and the holiday weekend saw substantial week-to-week jumps, discounting shows that added a ninth performance because the increase in grosses there isn't really fair. The biggest gainers were Phantom and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory at over $390,000 each. Other new shows, obviously referencing Charlie, not Phantom, that saw significant jumps were Anastasia, bouncing up $286,000, Present Laughter, jumping $235,000, and 6 Degrees of Separation, moving up $167,000. James, we talked about this last week, and despite the fact that everyone I know or have seen online that has seen this show has raved about it, like literal don't walk, run raves, A Doll's House Part 2 grossed an unbelievable number of $90,000, $90,503 last week, which boggles my mind when you consider that this is a Scott Rudin production. I am completely and utterly dumbfounded by what is going on with the lack of advertising and social media campaign for this show. when we did the Grosses last week, I checked their social media. They had like literally one tweet on their official Twitter account. So I have no idea what's going on here. I don't know if they're saving all their money, assuming they're going to get some nominations and they're just going to blitz it then. But it just boggles my mind when you see a show that is doing so well with word of mouth and which has such great stars gross less than $91,000. It's I don't want to say it's criminal because we're going to be talking about criminal stuff here shortly. It's just shocking to me. Anyway, moving on.
$90,000 is like a third of a Hello Dolly performance
ticket. Performance. You know, it's less than a Boy La Claudia won in the Heights. I mean, just saying. moving on, it all comes back to Lin-Manuel. Moving on, In Transit wrapped up its Broadway run, grossing $264,362 last week. Musicals Bandstand at nearly $447,000, Amelie at $589,000, and Groundhog Day at $607,000. We're doing okay, but probably need strong reviews like Groundhog Day got last night, or substantial nominations to break through. They seem to just kind of be treading water right now. Some of them, obviously, Groundhog Day was in previews during that, as was Bandstand. Amelie's already opened, so they're going to need something to kind of boost them up closer to that seven-figure mark. And finally, for our friends north of the border, as referenced in passing earlier, Come From Away hit the seven-figure mark for the first time in its two-month Broadway run, grossing $1,087,151. You're welcome, eh?
Hey, that's nearly $2 million Canadian.
Is that? I'm not exactly sure what the exchange rate is right now, but it's good for them. I'm happy for them. A small show in a small theater doing really, really well.
What's up in the show and casting news?
Well, yesterday, Jack Vertel announced the casting for the final Encores performance of the year, John Latouche and Jerome Morris's cult classic, The Golden Apple. The concert production will star Michaela Bennett, Ashley Brown, Carrie Compere, Jason Kravitz, Ali Mazzi, Lindsay Mendez, Nikenji, Ryan Silverman, and Rasta Thomas. The concert production will play City Center from May 10th through 14th, and tickets start at $35. Off-Broadway yesterday, it was announced that Emmy winner Peter Scolari will join the cast of The Dreyfus Affair at BAM later this month. Scolari joins the production, led by Max von Essen, that begins performances on April 27th and is scheduled to run through May 7th. Speaking of cast additions, yesterday Master Voices announced that J. Armstrong Johnson, Michael Kostroff, and Blair Brown will join the already star-studded concert of Victor Herbert's Babes in Toyland on April 27th at Carnegie Hall. They'll be joining a cast that already boasts Kelly O'Hara, Bill Irwin, Christopher Fitzgerald, Lauren Worsham, Jonathan Freeman, Chris Sullivan, and more. And finally, in the show and casting news, yesterday MTC announced that Jolly Abraham, which is just an awesome name, Greg Mazgala, Katie Sullivan, and Victor Williams will star in the New York premiere of Martina Mayock's new play, Cost of Living. Directed by Joe Bonney, the show is scheduled to run from May 16th through June 7th and is described as the story of four very different people in four very different circumstances, each trying to get by. As their lives intersect, Mayock's play delves into the chasm between abundance and need and explores the space where bodies, abled and disabled, meet each other. Sounds good. I know you really liked Ironbound Mayock's play last year, right? Was that you or what somebody else on this week on Broadway? Wasn't you? I remember great reviews for Ironbound, which was Mayock's play that played off Broadway last year. So I'm sure this one will be just as good.
Love Marin Ireland. Absolutely. But did not see that. All right. So Audra McDonald and Will Swenson to host the Drama League Awards.
Yes, before Queen Audra McDonald heads over to London for her pregnancy postponed run in Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, Broadway's first couple, Audra and current waitress Bad Guy, her husband Will Swenson, will host the 83rd Annual Drama League Awards this year on May 19th from the Broadway Ballroom at the Marriott Marquis in Times Square. In addition to the normal awards, and we'll talk about those in a second, this year's Drama League Special Award recipients will be somebody named Bette Midler, along with animal trainer Bill Berlone and director Michael Greif. The Drama League nominations will be announced tomorrow at 11 a.m. by Tony winners Bettina Miller and B.B. Newworth.
All right. Once Upon a Time gets a musical episode coming up in May.
Yeah, James, I gave up watching this show a few seasons ago, but since I was so giddy about the Flash Supergirl musical episode, I thought it would be a bit hypocritical for me not to at least mention that on May 7th, ABC's Once Upon a Time will air a special musical episode as the chosen one, Emma Swan, played by Jennifer Morrison, who will appear off-Broadway later this year in Matt LeBlanc's play, marries Killian Jones, who is also known as Captain Hook. According to Entertainment Weekly's exclusive, the show will feature original songs, but no word on who might have written them, although, considering this is on ABC, I think Disney can probably find a songwriter or two to pen some songs for Once Upon a Time.
All right. Oh, the Rebecca trial starts next week.
James, like glitter or herpes, Rebecca the musical just won't go away. We are now in year 6 of this saga that basically involved a Broadway production forced to cancel because it turned out that one of its investors had not actually died, but had in fact never existed and was in fact created by a con artist. Then a press agent who knew what was going on, Mark Thibodeau, emailed investors to warn them, which broke his contract with the show's producers. Well, the trial for this thing, I'm not exactly even sure who's on trial. Is it the Connors? Is it Thibodeau? I don't even know. It begins in New York City next Monday, April 24th, and apparently is open to the public. James, as we've said before, other than the scammer who made up and then killed an investor, I feel bad for everyone involved with this, from the producers to the actors and everyone in between. But the longer it goes on, the more sad it makes me overall. And maybe it's the rest of the news atmosphere and environment going on. It just makes me not want to pay attention to this at all.
Oh, I hope that they don't do something terrible to Mark Thibodeau. I mean, he might have broken his contract. Yeah. I don't know, but the greater good, I hope that's the argument. I hope.
We talked about this a few months ago. I don't remember how long ago. And it's like, yeah, I understand. He might have, you know, done the non-business ethical thing because he betrayed his client. But he ultimately did the ethical thing and warned people that had invested hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars. He warned them to be careful because if they weren't, they would probably lose hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. So I don't know. I just feel bad for everybody. It's just sad. And I it makes me, maybe because of what else is going on in the world, it makes me just wish it would resolve itself soon.
All right. Why don't you get us out of here?
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt and subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Before we go, tonight, Indecent opens on Broadway. Heard great things. James, you saw it and loved it, right?
Yeah, saw Indecent. I can't even remember last week. And it's quite a show. And we're going to have a double whammy next weekend on this week on Broadway where Michael and Peter are going to review God of Vengeance and Indecent in the same episode. So,
That's awesome.
Yeah, so take a listen to that. This is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for spending some of your Tuesday with us, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.